This is Be the Story. This week on Be the Story, let's talk about favorite classic story games. By this, I mean video games. Not just video games with stories, but video games where the story drives the game. I'll give a brief history of story games, look into how story and gameplay actually can be integrated, and give a couple of examples of my own personal favorite classic story games. That's all coming right up on Be the Story. Welcome to Be the Story, celebrating stories and those who tell them. I'm Tim King, and just back from a really nasty cold that kept me out of circulation for the better part of a week. But I'm back and really excited about this week's episode because story games is actually a personal passion of mine. There's nothing like interactivity when done well. To really make the story come alive, to really immerse yourself in the story. And in fact, the title, Be the Story, of the podcast, this title was originally inspired by story games. The fact that when you're playing a story game, you're not just watching a story, you're not just reading it, you're not just observing it, you're actually part of it. First, what's been on BeTheStory.com the past week, starting last Tuesday, a brief review of The Minister's Daughter by Julie Hearn. This is a young adult or teenage book, and on the whole, I liked it. And I blogged about exactly why. Then, be careful about happenstance. Happenstance can be a very powerful source in a story. If you're writing a story, a well-placed coincidence can provide that important opportunity to move the plot forward. Just make sure it doesn't drive the story or else the whole plot will feel contrived. Thursday's Spotlight was a story game called The Goat in the Gray Fedora. This is actually a free downloadable game by Mark Darren, starring Jason Ellis and published by Pinhead Games. And you can actually play this online at www.pinheadgames.com, or you can download it for free from their site. A cool, like, one-hour story game. I really enjoyed playing it. Friday, how to name characters. This is a topic that comes up from time to time, and if you've been here for any length of time, you'll know that I don't particularly think that choosing character names is all that big a deal. However, there are some things you can do to make your character names tell something about the characters themselves. By Saturday, my cold was in full force, and I was just trying to take care of myself to get this podcast out. But I did write a little bit about my experiences writing and, you know, how much, when you look back at the things that you've written years and years ago, if you're anything like me, you're just kind of like amazed at how much you've improved. And since many of the things that I wrote many years ago, I actually posted on Usenet, now they're permanently a part of Google Groups. And so now everyone can be embarrassed with me. Anyway, I told a little bit about my story on Saturday. And I also did get a bit of an opportunity over the weekend to write on a special project that I can't really tell you about in full right now, but within the next few weeks, I will tell you about it, whatever the outcome is. Well, when we come right back, I'm going to talk about story games, so stay tuned.
From the worlds between the pages of your favorite book to adventures teetering on the edge of the dice. The pilot's at the helm and our course is set. The dream ship gathers speed across the sea of possibilities. Welcome aboard the Dragonhearth.
I'm Tracy Hickman.
And I'm Laura Hickman. Each month we explore the limitless expanse of creative fiction and games, from the nuts and bolts of writing and publishing to the worlds of our creation.
Whether you're looking for practical advice on plot, character, and setting, or in search of new and distant realms of speculative fiction to explore, you'll find a home here on Dragonhearth.
Join our next voyage through your favorite RSS server or by visiting us at DragonHearthProductions.com. Tracy and Laura Hickman's Dragonhearth, voyages into the realms of imagination.
Welcome back to Be the Story. We're talking about favorite classic story games. Now, what do I mean by a story game? After all, most games nowadays have stories. Even action games have stories. Even platform games have stories. They've always had stories. So what differentiates a story game from other games that just happen to have stories with them or in them? Well, by story game, here's what I mean. I mean a game whose story drives the game. So in most games, the gameplay is the central element. So if it's a platform game, for example, you have Crash Bandicoot or Mario and his friends trying to accomplish, I don't know, bash blocks and find stars floating in midair and, you know, all that stuff. And that's all the gameplay. It's all part of the gameplay. That's what really drives the game. Then there's this backstory that's supposed to tie all the different levels together or something. But most of us really don't care about any of that. It's just kind of like this thing that you read from the little CD insert while someone else is taking their turn with the game, right? While they're taking their turn playing the game, you read the backstory. Yeah, right. But otherwise, we don't really care about it. Well, in a story game, the story drives the game. The gameplay is not the central element, but the story is the central element, or at least a central element. The gameplay is built up around the story. And here is the end result of that. The story gets so tightly integrated in with the gameplay that you can't remove the story from the game and still have a game left. It's a story game. Get it? In most games, the story is just kind of there to add spice to the gameplay. And if you removed the story, you would still have a game. It might not be as full as with a story, especially with some action games that have a story that take the scenes and connect them together and they have cut scenes between them. I'm thinking of games like Metal Gear Solid, for example. But really, even without the story, you could still play through the levels of Metal Gear Solid, and they would still make sense. Deus Ex is another one. You know, you can play through the levels without understanding the backstory. The story is really there to add spice to the gameplay. But in a story game, the story is so tightly integrated with the gameplay, you can't remove the story and have a game left, because you would just have pieces of game. Now, where did story games come from? Originally, story games came from the adventure genre. The earliest adventure games were text games, text adventures, what we now call interactive fiction. And the very first adventure was called Adventure, also called Advent. It was written on a PDP-10 by Will Crowther in the 70s. And the game was called Adventure, but the operating system only allowed file names to have 6 characters. So A-D-V-E-N-T, and that's all they could fit. So Advent is what the command was called to start the game. And Advent is basically a puzzle game. You have to explore this great underground cave in order to find buried treasure. And that's it. There are all kinds of puzzles and exploration that you have to do. And this was also the idea behind Zork, which was the first commercial adventure game. Zork, the Great Underground Empire. This game was published by Infocom, who pioneered commercial adventure games. And now Infocom is owned by Activision. The whole point behind Zork, like Advent, is to explore this great underground empire, solve various puzzles, and discover hidden treasures. Infocom, however, also published many story-rich text adventures, and other publishers of that era did as well. These were the progenitors of today's interactive fiction, and many modern interactive fiction authors in the interactive fiction community. They tell wonderfully written games. I'm thinking in particular of people like Adam Kadra and John Ingold, as well as many others. Now, Sierra Online, which was a company co-founded by Roberta Williams, and now Vivendi Universal Interactive Publishing owns what was Sierra Online. Anyway, Roberta Williams and the people at Sierra Online were the first to add images to adventure games, creating the very first graphical adventure games. And the very first one was called Mystery House. This was a black and white mystery adventure. The plot is basically you're in a Victorian mansion and the guests start being murdered one by one, and you have to discover who the murderer is before he gets you. Roberta Williams is best known for the King's Quest series of games, which is just one of the Quest series. There's a whole bunch of Quest series. There's King's Quest, Space Quest, Police Quest, and then there were the Leisure Suit Larry games. And all these actually are soon to be re-released in compilation series. So stay tuned to BeTheStory.com for more information on those. Jane Jensen joined Sierra in 1991. And became famous for the Gabriel Knight series of games. And she's still around, although I don't believe she's released any story games in a few years. Meanwhile, rewind a little bit, at LucasArts, some of the most beloved story games were being created, starting with the Monkey Island series. Well, actually not starting with, but the Monkey Island series is one of the famous series of story games at LucasArts. Also the games by Tim Schafer. And after Grim Fandango, Grim Fandango was perhaps the best loved adventure game of all time. After Grim Fandango, Tim Schafer and the others from the Grim Fandango team started their own studio, Double Fine Productions, and developed Psychonauts, which is a platform adventure game. And another story gaming hit. And I don't know what they're working on now, but I fully expect it to be yet another hit story game. Also now, numerous independent developers are trying their hands at story games. Usually, they base their games on the classic adventure formulae. So we'll have to see what sticks. But I have a feeling that innovation in making the story more immersive, that's where the most notable successes are going to show up. Of course, I'm partial to story, so my opinion probably doesn't mean anything there. So how do you integrate story and gameplay like this in a story game? Well, I'll go into it in a little more detail in an upcoming episode where we can actually write some simple story game. But briefly, an interactive story is, well, it's just like any other story. So there's a conflict, tension, you grow the conflict, you resolve the conflict, tack an epilogue on the end, a story arc. And as in any complex story, you can have multiple story threads that interweave and tie together. So they branch and they join and they interrelate with each other and affect each other. in each story thread, you have story events that can cause the plot to progress. This is just the same thing as you would see in a novel or movie or anything else. But here's where the interactivity comes in. The player can cause story events to occur. That's fundamentally it. Now, traditionally, you have external conflicts in the story, and the player encounters these external conflicts in the form of puzzles to solve. And this is why adventure games are traditionally puzzle-based games with external conflicts in the story. It's a tried-and-true formula, and in fact, if you ask some adventure gamers, they will even tell you that it's the puzzles that make an adventure game, and not the story. And of course, this goes back to the original concept in the form of Advent and Zork and early games of that nature, where puzzle gameplay was all there was. And even some more modern games, for example, the Myst series of games, very heavily puzzle-oriented. Anyway, in a future podcast, I'll talk about the standard adventure game formula and also talk about some cool variations. But for now, let's just look at a couple of my favorite classic story games. First, I want to take a very brief break, but I'll come right back with classic story games here on Be the Story. Stay tuned.
The following takes place between It Was a Dark and Stormy Night, and what would happen next, only time will tell. This is Bauer.
Jack, this is CTU. Where are you? We need you in the field.
I can't. I am in the middle of a severe plot twist.
Jack, what are you talking about?
What I am talking about is my daily word count, my goals in character development, and my possibilities in getting published.
Jack, your country needs you. You should be in the field.
No, I should be writing. Just like Myra Lafferty tells me on her podcast. She gives writing tips, personal anecdotes, and even features published authors in interviews. It's a totally Airwolf podcast.
Jack, you can't be...
Hold on. My position has been compromised. Repeat, my position has been compromised.
We'll send back...
No! Send me an editor!
Jack, you're pinned down. You should be returning fire.
No! I should be listening to Myra's podcast! I should be writing! Time is short. Subscribe to Myra Lafferty's I Should Be Writing at ishouldbewriting.com. Your life and the fate of the free world may depend on it.
Sensation I had before I blacked out, the thick smell of asphalt. And the first thing I saw when I woke up was her face. She said she had fixed my bike, free, no strings attached. I should have known then that things are never that simple. Yeah, when I think of Marine, I think of two things, asphalt and trouble.
Welcome back to Be the Story. That's the late Roy Conrad in the voice of Ben, the leader of the Polecats, from the classic game Full Throttle by Tim Schafer. This was published in 1994 by LucasArts. And it stars the voices of Ray Conrad, Mark Hamill, yes, that Mark Hamill, and Kath Soucie from Rugrats. Full Throttle is one of the games that Tim Schafer produced at LucasArts. It came between Day of the Tentacle and Grim Fandango, Day of the Tentacle is a more puzzle-oriented game, but still with a really rich and tightly integrated story, and very funny. Grim Fandango is probably the most loved overall adventure game of all time, and definitely something that's worth playing. But I picked Full Throttle to talk about today because, well, a couple of reasons. One is that I actually liked it more than I did Grim Fandango. And I know I'm going to get a lot of flack for that. But basically, I identified very strongly with Ben, not so much with Manny. I mean, Manny is a nice character, very richly done. But Ben, just the writing in Full Throttle is so focused and so well done. It touched me on a much deeper level. Even though Full Throttle is a much shorter game, and in fact, it's one of the primary complaints that people have about Full Throttle, is you can play through the whole thing in just a few hours. Even so, you know, if I start playing it, I started playing it to reacquaint myself with it for recording this podcast, and I had to forcibly stop myself from playing it because I just got so involved in it. Full Throttle takes place in the future, in the desert, and on motorcycles. Our hero, Ben, played by Roy Conrad, is the no-nonsense leader of the Polecats. He sets out to prevent an ambush of his gang, but instead ends up smeared all over the pavement and framed for murder by the evil Adrian Ripberger, played by Mark Hamill of Star Wars fame. Along the way, he finds an ally in Maureen, or Mo for short, played by Kath Soucie, who is Phil and Lil on Rugrats. Maureen is a mechanic with an awesome secret that relates very closely to the rest of the story. Here's how the story starts. Malcolm Corley wants Ben and his gang, the Polecats, to escort him to the Corley Motors shareholders meeting. Corley Motors is the last manufacturer of motorcycles left in the world. And Mr. Corley, of course, wants to do this as a publicity stunt. Makes perfect sense, but Ben doesn't go along with this. So he refuses his gang's services to escort Malcolm Corley to the Corley Motors shareholders meeting. And he finds himself knocked out cold and stuffed in a dumpster by the evil Adrian Ripberger and his goons. Adrian Ripberger is the second in line for the presidency of Corley Motors. Ben finally does wake up and gets out of the dumpster, but he doesn't have the keys to his bike. And the very first puzzles involve him finding his keys and learning that his gang is in for an ambush. So he tries to catch up to his gang, and instead he finds himself in a huge accident, blood all over the pavement, and probably would have died if it weren't for the fact that a reporter happens along out in the middle of the desert, finds him, takes him to a woman named Maureen, or Mo for short, who is a mechanic and who fixes his bike for him, and fixes him, too. But she needs a little bit of help getting it finished. The front forks were completely destroyed in the accident, so Ben needs to find new ones. That's another puzzle. Someone stole Moe's welding torch. Who could have done that? So Ben needs to find it. And also the bike needs some gasoline before it will run. So, three more goals, three more sets of puzzles. And you can actually solve these in any order. Well, kind of. The forks he can get from the junkyard, but first he needs to get into the junkyard, and he needs to do something about that pit bull. The torch is probably the easiest item to find, because you just look, and it's pretty obvious who stole it and where it is. It's just a matter of getting it back. The gasoline Ben might be able to get from the gasoline tower, well, if he can get by the security system. So, three sets of puzzles, and as soon as you solve all three sets of puzzles, the plot progresses. that's basically the pattern that you find in adventure games. You have these external conflicts, puzzles to solve. You solve the conflicts, right? Find the missing items or whatever, and accomplish the goals, and the plot progresses. The puzzles in Full Throttle are all pretty easy. The game also has some arcade-like sequences, which has kind of ticked off some adventure gamers and reviewers. But actually, I think it's their fault, because the arcade sequences are actually puzzles in disguise. They just look like arcade sequences, so people try to play them like arcade sequences, and it doesn't work. For example, in one particular set of puzzles, you're on the mine road, and you have to fight various foes in order to progress. Okay. But if you're treating this like an arcade sequence, like an action sequence, like you actually have to figure out how to fight effectively, you're going to be frustrated to no end. It's actually about finding the right weapons to use against each foe. And if you can just use your brain a little bit, figure out which weapon will work against which foe, and bang, 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 and you're through it. As I said, the biggest complaint that adventure gamers have about Full Throttle is that it's so short. You can play through the whole thing in only a few hours. But the story just is so engrossing, or at least every time I've played it, I haven't been able to put it down. And that's why I include it among my most favorite story games. The second classic story game favorite that I would like to mention is the Pandora Directive. This is a game by Chris Jones and Aaron Connor. It was published in 1996 by Access Software, now owned by Microsoft. And this story stars Barry Corbin, Kevin McCarthy, and Tanya Roberts, and was directed by Adrian Carr. You may recognize some of those names. The Pandora Directive was the fourth in the Tex Murphy series of games, and the second three-dimensional full-motion video game featuring the Tex Murphy character. The Pandora Directive, like all the Tex Murphy games, takes place in San Francisco in the year 2043. This is a generation after World War III left the world a radioactive slush pile. Tex Murphy is a private investigator, played by Chris Jones, who is one of the creators of the game, of the series. And Tex Murphy is hired by one Gordon Fitzpatrick, played by Kevin McCarthy, to find his lost colleague and friend, Thomas Malloy. But the search for Malloy puts Tex onto the trail of a dangerous secret involving space aliens and government cover-ups. And it doesn't come off as corny either. Tex has to fend off a formidable government agent named Jackson Cross, played by Barry Corbin of One Tree Hill, as well as Malloy's sexy niece, Regan Madsen, played by Tanya Roberts, from That 70s Show. Both of these characters are after the same dangerous secret involving space aliens and government cover-ups. Now, this game goes on and on for hours and hours as you go through the story. Every time I've played it, it's taken like a week to complete it, and yet I've played it several times. So that should say something about how much I enjoyed this story. You know, it's interesting, one of the innovative gameplay features of the Pandora Directive is that, you see, the story, it moves differently depending on how you play the game. So depending on what things you do in the game, the story will have a different result. You'll either get the girl or you won't get the girl. Or you might win, you know, have a happy ending or a not so happy ending. Or kind of an in-between ending kind of thing. And the whole idea behind this was that it was supposed to make the game more replayable. Because every time you played it, it was like playing an actual game and there was a chance of winning or losing and so forth. As opposed to most story games where you just kind of play through the story and what you do does not really affect the outcome of the story. Now, this whole idea of having how you play affect the outcome of the story sounds cool on the surface, and it did to me before I played the Pandora Directive. But, as it turned out, whenever I played it, or the second and subsequent times I played it, I first sought out a suitable walkthrough, you know, all the answers for how to play all the questionable sequences in the game so that I could always play it the way I wanted it to get the ending that I want. I wanted the hero to win. I wanted to get the girl. I wanted everyone to live happily ever after. In other words, I'd rather play the same good story over and over rather than play different, less good stories alternatively. And that, of course, is one of the things that makes me a story geek. The Pandora Directive, as the other Tex Murphy games too, it also has another neat feature. It has an entertainment mode. This is for story lovers. And it has a gamer mode. And the gamer mode has more puzzles and stricter scoring rules and so forth. So the gamer mode is kind of like you're trying to win. The entertainment mode, you're just trying to enjoy the story. It also has an integrated in-game hint system, which also ties into the entertainment mode and gamer mode. With entertainment mode, you can use the hint system as much as you want. With gamer mode, if you use the hint system, you get penalized points. And certain shortcut features are available to you only in entertainment mode. You can zap by certain puzzles in entertainment mode, and you can't do that in gamer mode. And so that was kind of cool that they had two separate modes, one for gamers, one for story people. And I see the same dichotomy sometimes on like adventure gaming boards. You have some people who say that, you know, a game can be great even if it has no story. Tetris is a great game, right? A great classic game. Yeah, well, it's a classic game, but I myself wouldn't call it a great game. I remember playing Tetris in college, and, you know, after playing it for hours on end, I would go outside, and it was like I saw these things falling from the sky, and I needed to rotate the pieces and stack them up nice and neat, or else the whole world would implode. You know, so I had went to sleep, and I had dreams, and I just played Tetris in my dreams all night. But, you know, that only lasted for a couple of nights, and then it went away and never came back. I still reminisce about being Manny Calavera from Grim Fandango. Whenever I hear certain styles of jazz music, similar to the background music in the Tex Murphy games, I think of the Pandora Directive. I just can't help it. And I feel like, oh man, I would love to play that again, if only I had the time. So on the one side, you have people who love the gameplay and who hate to play the same story through two or more times. But then on the other side, you have people like me who just love the story and would just love to watch the same story over and over. I mean, I watch my favorite movies over and over again. My favorite TV shows, I watch over and over again. My favorite novels, I read over and over again. It's like some sort of a sickness. Next week on Be the Story, The Way to Spin a Yarn. Conflict, resolution, and story arc. Yes, this is as basic as it sounds. So if you're already a writer, you may know all about this already. In any case, this is a subject that comes up over and over again on various writer boards and online writers' workshops. People will post stories, and it just doesn't have a story arc. And all you have to do is think in terms of conflict, resolution, and story arc. It's a fundamental structural formula that will never let you down. Thank you for listening to Be the Story. I look forward to seeing you next week. I'll see you then. Bye now.